broadcasting simultaneously from H-Town and the Motor City. Welcome to another episode of the aptly named podcast about no topic and extreme specificity. I'm Josh, along with my co-host and resident boffin, Dan. Say hi to the folks, Dan.
Hello.
Today we are coming to you about microphones, on microphones. I know the irony is real over here on the podcast. Dan, let's, I guess, start off with, how does a microphone work? Is it like the reverse of a speaker, or, you know, what are the parts? What's happening when you speak to the microphone, or like, how does it work?
Well, you pretty much nailed it already with that. It's the reverse of a speaker.
Oh, so it is that simple.
Yeah. So if you go back and listen to our speaker episode,
ooh, shameless self-plug.
Oh, yeah. Got to get that in there. I believe we talked about how a speaker is a diaphragm that is driven by an electrical coil in reference to a stationary magnetic field. Now, if you take that principle, you have to put a power into that coil that drives the diaphragm to move and vibrate air. And a microphone takes the air that's vibrating, uses that motive force to vibrate a diaphragm, and in reference to a stationary magnetic field or electrical field, sends out a signal based on that, based on a coil in reference to another field. So that's kind of it. I mean, there are many differences between speakers and microphones. Like in a microphone, the diaphragm has to be a lot thinner and lighter than on a speaker, because it has to be able to sense all those vibrations from your voice and from the air. Obviously, microphone diaphragms are smaller typically than speaker diaphragms. And the other thing about certain microphones is you can apply a static charge to a plate and the diaphragm to essentially get more excitation from the air movements. And that's how a condenser microphone works. So it uses phantom power, which is a relatively high voltage, to apply a charge to two substrates that then kind of allows them to move in a different way than if they weren't charged. I'm by no means a microphone expert, but I do have some hands-on experience. I set up microphones and ran the live sound mixer for my church growing up. So I constantly was setting up microphones for different applications and running cables and, you know, adjusting faders and things like that. So I was able to pick up some of the basic ideas for like what microphones you want to use for certain things based on that. And essentially there's two general types of microphones. There's dynamic and there's condenser. I already mentioned that condenser microphones use a phantom power. Dynamic microphones do not. They rely only on the motive force from the air that is exciting the diaphragm. They don't have any external power or anything. Some microphones have built-in, essentially, small amplifiers or preamplifiers. Going way back, the old-school microphones, like ribbon microphones, require really, really high gain. So they had built-in tube amplifiers in the microphone body to get them up to a usable signal to send out to, like, a recorder or a mixer or something like that.
Okay, you said, I'm sorry, you said condenser and dynamic microphones were the two types?
Those are the most the most common general types.
So like
ribbon what are some type is the kind of the third.
Yeah. So like, what are some like general applications for those different types?
Well,
like where would you find those different types?
Condenser microphones are more sensitive to nuance or smaller signals. So condenser microphones in general are categorized into a large diaphragm or a small diaphragm. A large diaphragm you use for picking up relatively softer signals. So they're very popular for vocals or softer instruments. Mm-hmm. Small diaphragm condensers can be used on a little bit more loud signals, like more instruments or things like that, guitars or other things. Mm-hmm. But those are used more in a studio environment or somewhere that's a little more isolated. Just because they are so sensitive, they're more likely to pick up the background noise or, you know, other adjacent instruments. So that's why a lot of instruments have like very localized, like clip-on microphones. Like you might see on a saxophone or a trumpet, they have a little microphone that just literally clamps right on the bell of the instrument and only is designed to pick up that instrument. That usually happens a little bit more in live environments, which is where dynamic microphones come in, because they don't have that phantom power to excite them more. They are better for picking up close signals. So that's why you have singers who get right up in the microphone on stage. They hold it right up to their mouth. You have drum microphones that where the microphone is right at the head or right at the cymbal. And they can typically handle a higher sound pressure level too without clipping or damaging the diaphragm. So that's a very generalized overview, but that's kind of where the two are used more.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So let's dive into, you know, what makes, you know, a good microphone. Is it, you know, diaphragm materials? Is it, you know, resistances in the components or things like that? What is it?
Well, to be blatantly honest, a good microphone is one that sounds good. So whether or not that uses exotic gold materials or, you know, really high tolerance components on the inside, a good microphone is one that works, that you like the sound of. So a lot of microphones rely on their build quality and their durability, because you're not going to use one that doesn't work. So you want to buy a good one that will last. But really it just comes down to, the way that all of those components come together for a certain application that gives you the result you want. Now, some of the parameters that you can look at are the sensitivity. So how much sound is it going to pick up? How much sound pressure level it can handle without distortion or damage. So if you have a loud instrument, that'll be something you want to pay attention to. The frequency response curve will be something you want to look at. Is it a bright sounding microphone or is it a warm sounding microphone? Is it rolled off on the top or the bottom? It all depends on how you want the outcome to be. So, you know, for vocals, a lot of times you want to roll off a little bit of the bottom end because it gets boomy and rumbly down there, or you want to boost up in the presence region in like 2 to 3 kilohertz or in the bright region that's like 10 to 12 kilohertz, just to give it a little more sizzle, a little more engagement. So that it's really up to the engineer or the artist or whoever is listening to decide how they want that to come out. But really it comes down to build quality, the design of the diaphragm, things like that. And I'm not as much of an expert in that area, mm-hmm. but it's all kind of a combination of things that give you a response that is desirable.
And I assume the system that you're putting it into or pulling it out of, or whatever, however you want to put it, that has a pretty decent impact on that quality as well.
Right. So similar to hi-fi, you've got a microphone preamplifier to boost the signal to a usable level. You've got analog to digital converters that can affect the sound. You've got other EQ and a reverb and effects you can put on. You've got compression. You've got all kinds of things, which compression was something that I only fairly recently kind of started exploring and messing with. Part of the reason why I wanted to start a podcast. But compression essentially takes the lowest signals and boosts them up, and it takes the highest signals and brings them down, so that you have kind of a smaller band of sound pressure levels that it puts out. And that can make something sound a little more cohesive, a little more normalized, and it can make it sound nicer. But each of those components has their own sound as well, which then affects your whole output. So it's a lot like a hi-fi system in that it's a sum of its parts rather than just a single component.
Right. So let's get into, you mentioned, you know, it's all about build quality and things like that. So before we started recording, we found out that my computer was using the microphone from my $7 or whatever webcam rather than the microphone from my $100 gaming headset. And the sound quality was not great. What's going on there? What's the differences, other, if any, other than build quality between those two microphones?
Well, my guess is that the microphone in your webcam is quite a bit smaller. It has probably a more restricted frequency response range. It probably has less high frequencies and less low frequencies that it can reproduce. Well, not reproduce, but can take in. Mm-hmm. And then also you just have, you know, a microphone preamplifier, an analog to digital converter, all of that inside the little body of the webcam that then goes out to USB, and it's using noisy USB power to power all of that. So it's just got space restrictions. It's got cost restrictions. It's got signal restrictions on what it can handle. It's got all of those restrictions, and which, I mean, yours didn't even sound very useful. It was popping and crackling, and it just wasn't very good in general. I'm not sure if that was the design or if it has an issue with it. But, you know, on a gaming headset where it's designed to have a, I guess, more clear and punchy vocal tone, it's at least designed to have a certain frequency response for vocals. It can have a little bit, you know, better tuned, better sized diaphragm. It's going straight to your computer's motherboard, which can process that signal better. Rather than over USB to a little tiny webcam. So it's got a lot less restrictions in my mind. But, you know, listeners may notice that I also sound quite a bit different from Josh's headset. And that's partially because Josh is sending a voice over IP signal through Discord to me, which I am then recording. So there's inherent compression and some probably distortion there. But I'm using a full-sized live vocal microphone that's going into a dedicated microphone preamp and analog to digital converter over USB to my computer. So it's just very different types of systems and with very different restrictions on what they can do. So my Shure SM58, I mean, it can be as big as it needs to be to give the response and the sensitivity that is useful for vocal applications, which is why I'm using it. So it's also pretty reasonably priced, which helps. But then my audio interface is a relatively new design. So the audio converters that go to USB are updated and do a really good job. It's got very clean preamplifiers, so it doesn't add a lot of distortion or affect the tone very much. So that's why it can sound, you know, so much different from just a headset plugged into a computer motherboard.
All right. Those were pretty much all of the questions that I had about microphones. Are there any topics other that you would like to explore, Dan?
Well, I had mentioned before that there are lots of different applications for different microphones. So I mentioned the Shure SM58. That's a very popular live vocal microphone. If you think of like a singer on a stage holding a microphone, you probably picture something similar to an SM58. It's been around for decades. Then there's kind of the sibling SM57, which is a little bit different. That's often used for guitar amps and other instruments. It's a very small diaphragm. And both of those are dynamic microphones. You've got your large diaphragm condensers, which are used in studios for vocals and things, like a bunch of Neumann microphones. You've got like AKG is very popular. Various other new players are out now that are very good sounding based on what I've seen. Sennheiser makes a lot of good wireless handheld microphones. They also have their, I think it's the 421 that's used on a lot of like drums and instruments. That's a dynamic microphone. So it's really interesting to me just seeing like how, after all of the years that we've been recording and playing music, how each of those like different microphones becomes iconic just from how different engineers have used it and how much people associate a certain instrument and sound with a certain microphone or setup. So that's been really interesting to me, is learning from YouTube channels like Produce Like a Pro or others out there, just learning about like, oh yeah, they've got the classic XXX microphone, using that for snare. I'm like, you know, now that I think about it, I've seen that in a lot of like, you know, studio tour videos. And then they, you know, play a sound clip and I'm like, yep, that's a snare sound that I've heard in tons of albums that I've listened to. And then you go back and learn like, oh, this engineer did this many albums and, you know, I've heard all of those. Yep, that's a very consistent sound. And he used this analog mixing board and had that specific kind of sound signature with it. So there's kind of a almost a set way of doing things at this point, but it's really interesting to see what you can do with different microphones in different applications and then putting that into a whole system. But there's tons of content out there if you want to learn more. But I hope that can help you kind of understand like how different sounds are recorded or how a certain sound can be reached based on certain limitations. So that's about all I have. Josh, do you have any other questions?
No, that pretty much does it for me. I'm sure in the days ahead, I'll come up with more and maybe we can revisit microphones in the future.
Okay. With that, thanks for listening and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Yeah, have a good one, everybody.